Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing, the podcast brought to you by Peter Higgins at Conkers3 on Twitter and Wheelie Dealer at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is podcast number 21 and we've been now running since November 2018 and we've enjoyed what we've been doing so far. We've had fantastic feedback from you guys and ladies and gents from all across the UK and around the world. So thank you for your continued support. Thank you. Those that have recently subscribed. And thank you also, if you're enjoying these podcasts, please subscribe, please give us your feedback, as some of you have done. And we also like to incorporate some of your feedback into the articles we write accompanying our podcast. Pete, how are you today?
Yeah, not bad, mate, not bad. Like I say, I'm sat here in my hazmat suit.
Hazmat. Fully head to toe, I take it, mate, yeah?
Head to toe, mate, I'm taking no chances because, down the wires, you can get infected and stuff. And, I've heard you went to a Tesco's or something the other day, so, you never know what I could catch. I ain't taking no chances, mate.
I did go to a Tesco's and I've almost felt like I needed to stop when I went down the booze aisle, okay? this is no joke. This is still going on, Pete.
Was there anything in it?
When this thing kicked off in Feb properly, right? You could go down the booze aisle, and all the booze was still there. Okay,
wow.
When it proper kicked off later on in Feb, you go down the booze aisle, all the beers were gone. Okay, bar one, and that was the Corona beer.
No.
Right.
No.
I'm being honest with you now, mate.
That's hilarious.
At the weekend, the Tesco's I go into, not mine, I don't own it, there was still a disproportionate number of Corona beer on the pallets in comparison to every other brand.
Either that is like some weird human psychology, or maybe people are just really stupid. It could be the latter, let's be honest.
We keep going on about psychology on this podcast and we see more and more of it every single day in every bits of walks of life, in the media, on Twitter, on Facebook. It's just, it's carnage out there. And that's what I said saying to the last podcast. One of my worries going forward is people's mental health and well-being. One of the most important things we need to make sure is we look after people and we're kind, because there's lots of stuff causing lots of stressors out there. And people are being derailed by this COVID virus, unemployment, hunger, poverty, you name it, and not being certain about their jobs going forward.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there must be so much worry out there. I mean, it was interesting today. Just before we started this podcast, well, what is it today? 16th. So it's Thursday the 16th of April, isn't it? Before we started the podcast, I was watching a bit of the Daily Briefing, the Dominic Raab and stuff. And that, they announced that it's going to be another 3 weeks, which, we all were expecting anyway. But what he did say is he kept saying things like, the light at the end of the tunnel. And he set out five conditions that had to be met or the things they were going to be looking for to be able to start easing up on lockdown. So, it was almost like there is a little bit of hope, although we're not going to say definitely here's a date and give an exit plan, as a lot of people are obviously asking for.
The difficulty he has, Pete, and this is what people are going to start unpicking, and some of them already have started unpicking it, is that Matt Hancock's caught between a rock and a hard place, okay? So he's promised 100 tests a day by the end of this month, okay? He said that a little while back, okay?
Well, funnily enough, Dominic Raab repeated that 100,000 tests a day just now, so they're still sticking to that.
They're sticking to that, but the last stats I had regarding the 14th of April was that they'd completed nearly 16,000 tests, yeah?
So in a day.
In a day, okay? Yeah. We're now halfway through the month. That's a big climb to jump from 16,000 to 100,000 tests a day.
Yeah.
So he's got to be careful about rhetoric, right? Becoming action, becoming fact. Yeah?
They must have a ramp-up plan for that testing, because they're taking a hell of a risk to keep repeating it, aren't they? If they don't have a clear way of getting to that kind of number.
They've got to. I mean, that's the numbers for the tests. We've got the numbers for the ventilators. We've got the numbers for the PPE equipment. You know, all of those have got to come together. But at the same time, we've got to. They're caught between a rock and a hard place. So I was listening to an interview with Jared Lyons. Now, Jared Lyons was the other person that was up for the Bank of England job. Okay.
For
all intents and purposes, he came runners up. He didn't get the job. And to quote him, he was saying, from the stats that he's received, it's costing the UK £13.1 billion per week. They're making a loss per week because of the lockdown. Yeah, so that's collapsing the economic revenues that we have as the UK. So every week that we go on, that's what it's costing.
So, sorry, is that the tax revenue that the government isn't getting?
Yes.
Right, okay. Yeah, well, that's a lot of money, isn't it? It's true.
A lot of money. A lot of revenue that's not coming our way.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at.
I did feel on the press conference bit today, Dominic Raab did keep saying, you know, he was sort of saying, this is not verbatim, but he was sort of saying, yes, we understand the economic damage and we understand that we cannot do lockdown for too long. So it's nice that they're being sort of cognizant of that. Because I think, you know, I've almost had the sort of impression sometimes it's almost like they don't care about the economy and they're just totally obsessed by the scientific information on coronavirus, you know, which is sort of fair enough, but you can't just ignore the economy because, you know, you're going to cause more deaths in the long run by destroying the economy. So, you know, it's got to be a way through that conundrum, if you like. So it's nice to see they are being a bit more sort of like aware of it, maybe.
I'm not sure that I agree with all of that, Pete. I mean, they are focus on the economy, they have to be, you know, which is why Rishi's put all the stimulus out that he's possibly can thus far. I suspect there's going to be more. Given what we've seen with what the various different parties are doing all around the world, all stimulus, they're all trying to do it coordinated way to try and help everybody. The main problem we've got is that we haven't hit a plateau yet, I don't think, regarding the numbers, Pete. Yeah. And we've now had lots of debates and discussions about the homes, the residential settings which people are in, and the numbers of people that are not being counted as having died of COVID-19, etc. So they're cognizant of all of what's going on, but I think they've got to marry the two together to make sure they deal with the COVID and they deal with the economy. And it's a case of what should they put first? I don't have the answer to that. And this is the thing. I think too many people think X, Y, and Z has got the answer. We've had Dominic Raab presenting on the behalf of the PM. We've had Rishi presenting on the behalf of the PM. We've had Matt Hancock. We've had Alok Sharma. But essentially, it's still the government speak. And somebody needs to come out with something which addresses the economy and also the virus. So if you're going to have somebody talking about the virus, let's put things in place that addresses all the needs for all the healthcare professionals that are out there, all the volunteers, etc., ensuring that they're safe. Because the numbers of people that are dying and the numbers of doctors and specialists and healthcare workers and volunteers and etc. that are being diagnosed as having COVID-19 is going up and up and up to an alarming rate. And the numbers that have died on the front line are going up at an alarming rate. So that needs to be addressed, because without them, how do we deal with the numbers of people that are going in the hospitals in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the numbers of healthcare professionals who've died or whatever, it's horrendous. You know, it must be vying with Italy. I mean, everyone always holds up Italy as the sort of like worst case for the virus, but blimey, we can't be far behind. I mean, it's not exactly a great record, but hey, it is what it is. But I noticed a few things in the slide pack that they were showing earlier. One of the ones that's worth spotting is that the number of cases in London, hospitalization cases in London, that's people in London hospitals with it, that is starting to drop. And obviously London is the big number. And it was the same sort of curve. It was sort of looping round, you know, looping downwards on like Northeast and Midlands. So, you know, so they were starting to show that sort of drop. The other thing that was interesting was they were talking about, you know, the R naught thing, yeah?
Yes.
And they say that, you know, the R naught is the number of people, if you get the virus, it's how many people you infect. So if there's an R naught of 3, it means you catch it and you infect 3 people, yeah? And what they've been trying to do is to get the R naught below 1. Because once it's below 1 person, the epidemic is then in retreat. And they said they're pretty sure now the R naught is below 1. But they also said there was like 3 epidemics running at once. They said there's the epidemic in wider society, and that seems to be the best one, which is what I thought was a bit scary. And they said on that one, the R naught is definitely below 1. They've then got an epidemic within hospitals, and they've also got an epidemic within care homes. And I found that a bit scary because I'm thinking, hang on, if the public can control their bit, which bit of government responsible for? Anyway.
Yeah, you made a brilliant point there, Pete. And the other one that no one's really talking about, yeah, how the people that are confined for misdeeds, right? The people that are in prison.
Oh, yeah, mate, I'm in prison.
So you've got a large...
Oh, you mean prison as opposed
prison,
to prison.
Prison.
Yeah, right.
Her Majesty's pleasure. Yeah, there's a number of cases going on in there now. No one's talking about them. It's like, oh, we don't need to worry about them. They've done the wrongings, them. Well, let's leave them there. But there are other people in there that are on quite small, you know, menial charges that are in prison, that are stuck there, that are confined within. It's almost like being on a cruise and then all of a sudden finding out a couple of people have got the virus and you can't get out. You can't get off the boat.
And, of course, the wardens get it as well.
And then the wardens get it.
But it's funny because you're right. That hasn't been... barely mentioned at all lately, and it was funny, I was talking to my brother the other day, and you know, a few weeks ago we kept hearing about Iran, didn't we?
Yeah.
How bad it was in Iran. Do you know, I haven't heard about Iran on the main news for weeks now. It's just dropped away. But my brother said he'd read something, or he said it's absolutely terrible out there apparently. So yeah. I mean, there's some countries really suffering with it. You know, well, as we are, obviously, we're suffering with it, but some countries are really in a state with it, yeah, obviously.
And this is why I touched on in the last podcast, Pete, about the countries that no one really talks about. You know, there's 100 and, I think it's 102 countries have applied so far to the funding available from the IMF.
Yeah.
The global sort of fund that reaches out to everybody. That shows you how difficult and how bad it is out there, that all these countries need that support, you know, because you're talking about some countries where they haven't got any clean running water. So how do you combat that if you can't even wash your hands?
You know, well, some of these countries, I can't remember which country it was, but some like African state or something, it's only got 3 ventilators, like 1, 2, 3, as in 3 ventilators in the whole of the country.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that's just, and we know they've got abysmal healthcare systems, but truth, that's like, yeah, not good.
You just don't want it to go into the poorest countries, mate, because some of them are going to get absolutely wiped out if there's no, you know, infrastructure to actually deal with it, you know.
Yeah.
So we talk about not having enough ventilators, we talk about not having enough PPE. Some countries have got nothing or very, very, very little, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. One thing as well that I spotted earlier, I caught a bit of Andrew Cuomo. You know, the New York governor.
Oh, he's been brilliant.
Governor,
he's been absolutely
governor,
brilliant,
mate.
He has.
Well, he was quite interesting because he was setting out a sort, well, he called it the guidelines for how they would ease the lockdown. And I think that's very much the kind of messages that the markets want to hear. So, you know, so he wasn't saying, yeah, we're just going to lift all the restrictions. But he had, it was one of the things that I thought was really interesting. He had a little matrix, and his matrix had things like, how essential is the business? How risky is the business? You know, it had like four box matrix. And if you were a high risk and non-essential, then it would be harder for that company to open, you know. And they said that all businesses will have to say where they sit within that matrix and how they can reorganize how they work to be able to justify opening, you know, or whatever restrictions they're going to need or whatever.
No, he's been on the ball, Pete. He's been under a lot of pressure because of the numbers, and it was just rapidly increasing around him, you know, falling around his ears.
Oh, yeah.
And at one stage he was asking for equipment, and Trump was saying, no, you can't have it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then more recently, about a week or so ago, Trump was saying, you know, I'm going to tell the states to open and they're going to listen to me and blah, 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 blah. And it was Cuomo that actually came out and said, look, you can't dictate to the states. It's not constitutionally possible. You know, we're in control. He's not the king of us. You know, we're in control of our states. We have to decide independently of all of it. And then this week, what happened? Trump comes back and he says, oh, I've given it over to the states for them to decide when it's appropriate, for them to make the decision, for them to say when they're going to come out of lockdown. Because it's about culpability, isn't it? You know.
Well, yeah, you know.
Accountability. And
Trump never wants to have his hands on it, does he?
Absolutely. And we know Trump doesn't take responsibility for anything that goes wrong, but only things that go well. So, you know, it's been absolutely, you know, fantastic. But the shout out I would give, Pete, is to the and I always get her name wrong, is the New Zealand leader.
Jacinda.
Yeah.
Jacinta somebody, isn't it? Yeah.
Ardern, yeah?
That's her. That's the one.
And she's been absolutely on point, mate. The number of cases over there, the number of deaths has been minimal. And there's been stuff on Twitter asking why, regarding certain countries that have dealt with this particularly well, yeah, or better.
Yeah.
Have these countries been led by females? Yeah?
That's a scary thought.
Why is it a scary thought, Pete?
Women
make better investors than men. And a lot of times, women make better leaders than men. It's a fact, Pete.
Well, the other gender one related to the virus is that it turns out one of the biggest risk factors is being a bloke.
Well, there you go. Karma. There's karma for you, mate. So you've got Germany, you've got Taiwan, you've got New Zealand, you've got Iceland, Finland, Norway. All of them dealt with it quite proactively, yeah, passionately, yeah. And this is about different mindsets. Men's brains are wired differently, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's a nature debate, I think, could be had. But you look at the number of deaths in Denmark, Ireland, Finland, New Zealand, Norway, Taiwan, yeah, Taiwan 6, Pete, Norway 98, New Zealand 4.
I suspect with
Finland 49, Iceland 8.
I suspect with countries like Taiwan and South Korea, in a way, they've been lucky, if that's the right word.
I didn't mention South Korea, mate.
Oh, no, I was going to throw South Korea in as an example of a country that's done really well with hardly any deaths. And the common factor is that they've all had things like SARS and that before, and they learnt from those kind of epidemics. And in a way, we've had a problem because we've been so lucky to have avoided epidemics for so many, for roughly almost 100 years, you know.
Yeah.
We've sort of forgotten what to do.
But the thing is, that's a big problem. This is the thing, Pete. Sometimes you have to make a decision and be quick with it and get it wrong rather than being slow with it and getting it wrong. So Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand, she was early to get the lockdown and crystal clear on the maximum levels of alert she was putting the country under and why. Yeah, she imposed, this is the brilliant thing, she imposed self-isolation for people entering New Zealand almost above and beyond everybody else. And there were only 6 cases in the whole country of people returning that brought that, and banned foreign visitors entirely from entering soon after. That was it. Done. No flying back into New Zealand now. We're done. Let's just deal with what we've got here. You know what I mean? And then they're almost trying to get back to normal now.
Yeah, it's been done very differently, hasn't it, in various places. So, mate, what do you think it means for the markets then? What's your thoughts on where we are now?
Well, it's been very, very interesting the last week or so. We've obviously had the bank holiday in the middle of that. And there were so many, I don't want to call them new investors, but a lot of investors who were, and you were dealing with loads of them, Pete, and I was dealing with quite a few of them as well. And the markets could see with people just wailing and gnashing of teeth to say what was going on. We had the fastest decline in the markets for decades and decades, going back to 1937, some people were saying, right?
So we had the fastest. What was this? This was about 3-4 weeks ago.
Yeah, we had the fastest decline. So we had all these people going, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then the markets, with all the stimulus and all the money coordinatedly thrown at it, we had the FTSE hit, 4,978 or something like that.
You're right. It was 4,898. Yeah.
So it went sub 5,000. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've had the bounce from the lows, and we've gone up 20%. Let's just say 20% for the record, 21%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so everyone's going, oh, we're back in a bull market from a bull market bounce. And I'm going this week, oh, these people are so stupid to have sold that and gone all cash. We do not know where the market is going. The beauty is, and the objectivity that you should have, is that you do not, I do not, Pete does not, no one knows where this market's going to go.
Exactly.
So to say that the market's gone up 20% and that therefore this has been the sharpest return back to the bull market that we've had from a market going down as fast as it did before, it's a bit too fast to say that.
It's too early to say.
It's too early to say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, where do I think the market's going to go going forward, Pete? I simply do not know the answer to that. Because every day it's a moving feast of noise with regards to certain stocks and certain things being thrown at the market. One thing I do know, though, is the facts that have come out, or the stats that have come out, should I say, I get that correct, from the IMF regarding the lockdown and what they're projecting, okay? So they're saying real GDP stats was, right, in 2019.
Yeah.
World output, 2.9. Advanced economies, 1.7. US, 2.3. Euro era, area, 1.2. Okay. Germany and France, 0.6. France, 1.3. Italy, 0.3. Japan, 0.7. UK was 1.4. Okay. Canada, 1.6. Okay.
Yeah.
The projections regarding this lockdown and the impact of COVID-19 pandemic and the severity of what it's had on growth across these regions is as follows. And these are merely projections, Pete, right?
Yeah.
And we know with economic projections, they can be way off, okay? So world output 2019, 2.9. Projections for 2020, minus 3.0.
Whoa.
Advanced economies, 2019, 1.7. 2020, minus 6.1. United States, 2019, 2.3. Projections for 2020, minus 5.9%.
Ooh, Trump ain't gonna like that.
Euro area, 2019, 1.2. 2020, minus 7.5 as a collective. Let me just touch on the UK, okay?
Yeah.
1.2 for 2019. Minus 6.5.
Ouch.
For 2020. So if you're a bull in the market and you're thinking, oh, it's happy days, this season's over, we've thrown all this stimulus at here, we've furloughed people, people made redundant, everything's going to open back up and we're going to bounce straight back in 2020. And my share price, that's already recovered by 20% and 30%. That's it. We're off to the races. I'm throwing my ISA at this and I'm buying it now. Or I've already bought things and this is it. They're going to carry on climbing back to new highs in 2020. I'm not so certain of that. I'm not saying no. I'm saying I'm not so certain of it. But I'm looking at the GDP figures, and usually all the businesses that are listed, their revenues are part of the GDP that's generated for these countries.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So it doesn't look that rosy, Pete. But what do I know?
I mean, one of the shocking things I heard for GDP, for UK GDP, I think, was it the Institute for Fiscal Studies or someone like that? I think in 2008-09, you know, the credit crunch, I think the worst we had was something like an 8% drop for a quarter or something, yeah? And what the IMF had predicted, IMF, no, the OBR, wasn't it?
OBR.
Responsibility. They were predicting minus 35%. I mean, that is just like, what? That's like the most, but it's, it is believable. I mean, if you shut everything down, no one's buying anything, no one's moving anywhere, no one's doing anything, you know, you are going to get these kind of hits. And I mean, that is, you know, minus 35. It's just like another scale, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, I saw something from Andrew Sentence, and he had a slightly different figure from the OBR, Pete. And he was saying projections from the IMF, which I just told you about, was minus 6.5%. IMF was 6.5%.
Those IMF figures are for the year, aren't they? Rather than
GDP for 2020.
Yeah, so I was talking about there about a quarter or something like that.
Okay.
And then for the year, it would recover and you might get, what was it, minus 8% or something for UK?
Right. So he was saying for the OBR.
Yeah.
OBR was saying 12.8% for the year of 2020.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So even that, you know, you've got a call between 6.5 and 12.8. So let's take the middle figure. Yeah. You've got minus 9% there. Yeah. 9 plus.
That is going to take some recovery, isn't it?
It's going to take some recovery, and people need to realise that their stocks that they're invested in make part of the GDP figures there. So some stocks are going to do well, and some are not going to do so well.
Yeah. It's funny, because I have this funny sort of like view on all this stuff, where to a large extent, I try to just cut out the noise. And what I do is I'm very driven by the charts, you know, the technicals. So it's one of those, don't trade what you feel. You know, don't trade what you think, trade what you're actually seeing. And unbelievably, the other day, I completely lost the plot and I've done a small long spread bet, long, not short, long, on the S&P 500. And my main driver for that is that we've had a bull cross on the 13/21 day exponential moving averages, which I find is one of the best indicators there are that a market is going to rise. It's baffling, really. It's like, why on earth are they going up? But I guess with all the stimulus and the quantitative easing and all the rest of it, we're back in that situation where it's the Tina trade. There is no alternative, and you know, you're getting no yield on bonds and this kind of thing, and the only things we yield are stocks, and it's almost like people are being forced into stocks still. So I mean, it's an incredible thing. What I'm looking for in terms of calling a bottom, if you see what I mean, actually thinking we've bottomed, is the first thing I'm interested in is that 13/21 EMA. You know, that bull cross is a very good sign on the US markets. But the other one I want to see is the monthly candle that we get produced for April. Once we've got a full candle, if that's a nice bullish candle, which it could be, then that would be a sign that things are calming, you know, are looking better. So, you know, those two things together really would be a very good sign.
The question I would ask there, Pete, would be for how, when you say bottom for how long?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm probably talking here about a bottom for a few months or whatever. You know, I doubt it's a bottom for years. You know, as you say, it could easily go lower. But I think it would be the kind of bottom that, you know, for me personally, that's the kind of bottom that I'd feel quite, you know, a lot more confident about than we are at the moment, where we've only had like one bullish indicator. And the interesting thing is on the FTSE 100 and on the DAX and the CAC 40 and things like that, they haven't done 13/21 bull crosses yet. I mean, they were getting close, and then we had a really bad day yesterday, didn't we? Wednesday the 15th, we had a really nasty day, and that sort of like knocked them off doing a bull cross. But if we can get some stability over the next couple of days, we could get a bull cross on the FTSE 100 next week, I think. And if the American markets can keep rising, which I think they might, then that would pull up the UK one as well, I think.
You could be right, Pete. My only caveat would be is that we've seen this happen so many times before, historically, where the markets have pivoted and everyone starts to celebrate, and then it goes down again. And you saw the sharp intake of breath yesterday when, you know, we had the markets turn down again very briefly, and everybody was going, the people that were very, very bullish and calling everyone else idiots went very, very quiet for the whole of Wednesday.
Yeah, it was noticeable how quiet Twitter was yesterday. It was a bit of a sort of wake up call, wasn't it, really, yesterday, that things have been a bit rosier for a couple of weeks, and it's like, well, hang on, don't get too carried away.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I put a tweet out about it, and there's a chap called what's his name? Will Mead. Okay,
right.
And he's a former PM at Goldman Sachs, and he also founded a $1.2 billion hedge fund, educated at University of Chicago and John Hopkins, and a former editor of Forbes. Okay. And he's, to quote him, Pete, he's saying 20% gains are common in bear markets and usually never signal a bottom. Okay.
Yeah.
And he finishes off with saying we expect the bear market of 2020 to eventually join the list of 1929 to 1932, 1938 to 1942, and 2000 to 2003. And to explain what he's talking about here is the fact that on the way down to the very, very bottom during 1929 to 1932, they had a rise of 48%, markets went down again. A rise of 23%, markets went down again. A rise of 29%, markets went down again.
Wow.
A rise of 35%, markets went further down again. A rise of 25%, and the markets finally bottomed after all of that. Yeah. I'm just moving more to where people might actually recognize what I'm talking about here now. So we've got the Dow Jones Index at, say, 11,700 in 2000. Yeah, it went down to 8,300. Let's just say that as a figure.
Yeah.
Rose 29% to 10,700, then dropped all the way down to 7,300. Yeah.
Incredible swings, yeah.
And then went back up to 9,000. So these are the size of moves that you can see before they go to bottom, Pete.
Yeah, and before you get the actual final.
Before you get the actual bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously we've got more stimulus going on and more stuff going on and more stuff going on. And we've got the adage of don't fight the Fed. You know what I mean? All of that great noise is going on around the markets. And you've got to take some of that, you know, on board.
Yeah.
But don't put your house on it, folks. Yeah.
I mean, this ties up in my sort of way of doing things is I just ignore all this stuff, mate. You know, I read all these things from various people saying, oh, we're in the worst bull market. I read loads of people say, sorry, the worst bear market. I hear loads of people saying we're in the best bull market. I don't think anybody knows. So all I do is I just look and see what the charts are telling me. And if the charts are telling me, right, you've got to be long now, then I'll be long. If the charts are saying to me, you've got to be short now, then I'll probably go short. And I can be fairly quick because I'm pretty much leaving my stocks as they are. You know, my share portfolio, I haven't really touched it. I'm just leaving it. But what I'm doing is I'm doing long index trades or short index trades, depending on what charts tell me to do. But I doubt that I will do much on the long side. You know, it's like I won't do big positions on the long side because I don't really trust it. But I would do big positions on the short side, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, I understand what you're saying there, Pete.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Anyway, yeah, that was the markets. Mate, we covered a lot of stuff there. Stocks, any stocks that you want to run through?
Well, I spoke about being focused on AI and pharma and other things.
Yeah.
In the last one, took you a bit by surprise, Pete, when I said I'd sold off some stocks.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just wanted to. Some people said, you know, wanted me to go into more detail regarding what I'd done and why.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
And so I don't like to talk too much about my stocks on here, but for the people that have asked, I'm going to explain it a little bit. And it's a moving feast for me because I've got the beauty of being able to be as flexible or as rigid as I want to be with the stocks that I've got. And having seen what's happened regarding the main bulk of my portfolios in AstraZeneca, one of the things I wasn't able to touch on is obviously AstraZeneca's dual listed. Yeah. So having sold some of my stocks, I was hedging that and hedging other things against the portfolio.
Yeah.
And one of the hedges that I had was regarding the US ADR of AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
Obviously the UK listing of it as well. And the beauty of doing that is we have bank holidays Yeah. We're also, the markets opens at different times and news is released on, you know, on US time and UK time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when the UK markets are shut, the ADR is still trading. And depending on where it's going, I can flip in or flip out. So there was some news.
Quick one. That ADR, so that's an American depository receipt.
Yes.
So it basically is like having the shares in America. It's like you can buy them on the American index like a normal share, isn't it?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely, yeah. Spot on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you've got essentially, I think it's essentially about 1.8, 1.9, the price of a ADR to a, you've got an AstraZeneca share, which is less than 0.9 of, yeah? So less than half.
That's like a ratio sort of thing.
Ratio.
Isn't it?
Trying to get my maths right. Silly, yeah. Trying to do that whilst I'm trying to concentrate on what I'm talking about.
Yeah. walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, having made the fuss of what I was trying to do about the edging,
yeah.
Some news came out at the weekend regarding AstraZeneca, and I thought that is absolutely astonishing news, yeah? And it was basically, they had a drug they were testing, and basically, Pete, it was rare as hen's teeth, this kind of news.
Oh,
they
yeah.
had to cut the actual trial short.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And essentially, what they were trying to say was, this Tagrisso Phase 3 ADAURA trial had been so successful and overwhelmingly efficient. The efficacy, if I can't even say the word.
Efficacy.
Efficacy, that's the
efficacy.
Word.
Efficacy, yeah. I think it means it works.
Yeah, worked so well that it was being stopped. And they were going to just push forward with it, yeah?
So they're ending the trial early because it's obviously so brilliant.
Absolutely. So that came out on the 10th.
Yeah.
So I'm there on bank holiday Monday trying to just close off the hedge on the US side of it, hoping and praying that it didn't move too much on the Monday to close off the AstraZeneca edge to just see where it would go.
Yeah.
And subsequently, it's gone up a good nearly 10% over the past couple of days on three bits of really, really strong news coming out of AstraZeneca. And this is what I've been saying all along. The pipeline for AstraZeneca is brilliant. And in comparison to lots of other large behemoth farmers, it's up there amongst its peers. Whereas we know, you know, 4, 5, 6, 8 years ago, they were written off when they were £40 a share. Nobody wanted to know them. And it's within, which is quite staggering, Pete, it's within 1%, 1 and a bit% from its 52-week high, AstraZeneca.
Well, it's all-time high, isn't it?
Yeah, all-time high, sorry.
It's all-time high. I hold AstraZeneca as well, and I'm so pleased with it. It's been brilliant.
So as a FTSE 100 company, there's not many companies in the FTSE 100 that are sitting near or above their all-time highs.
Absolutely.
What year high.
And it, as you said, what really helps with AstraZeneca, apart from the fact it's obviously quite defensive and it's in the health sector, which is quite sort of topical at the moment, what really helps is this long pipeline. There's always news and there's always something coming out. And it's, I said about this the other day, it's amazing how few negative things they get. You know, you think of all these trials they're doing, you probably get like, I don't know, it seems like say 1 in 8 that goes wrong. I mean, their success rate's incredible.
Pete, this goes back to what I was saying on the podcast with the Investors Chronicle with Phil Oakley and John Newman.
Yeah.
They're a tech company, Pete. They're a tech company. This is where the artificial intelligence and the quantum computing comes in. They're crunching the numbers and they're going, nah, let's bin that. Let's stop that. Let's stop that. Let's stop that.
Yeah.
And they're pushing forward the ones that have got more than a 60, 70, 80% potential success rate. They're still going to get ones that go wrong, even when they've tested them and got them to the point where they think this has got an 80% success rate.
Yeah.
And they're still going to go wrong.
They've reduced that risk.
Yes, but they're reducing it and reducing it and reducing it and reducing it. And the efficacy of their tests are going to be getting better and better and better. Yeah.
So, that's excellent.
And you've touched on it. You know, they've got the pipeline, but also because it's pharma, Pete, it's not cyclical, right? It's not operationally geared. It's not got fixed cost. It's not retail facing. Yeah. All those sort of entities that are out there that have got all those issues are going to get impacted at some point or other. AstraZeneca will get impacted, yeah, when people say we're no longer going to take pharmaceuticals to deal with our health problems, or
it's not going to happen, is it?
Well, I don't know when that's going to happen. We've got an aging population as well, and they're going to get involved in this COVID-19 stuff as well, dealing with trying to find a solution for it and all the rest of it. So they're in the space right now that I think is going to be a space that they can grow in. And they've got lots of drugs covering every single aspect of rare diseases, cancers, and so on and so forth, diabetes.
Absolutely, the sweet spot.
So that's why I keep it as a stock, my go-to stock. You know, am I married to it? Probably. My wife wouldn't want to hear that, but you know what I mean? So that's why it's there. But
what's your wife's name? Astra.
I could change it to that. You know what I mean? But she's more valuable to me than AstraZeneca, fortunately. I love her to bits. So that's why it's there. But still things can go wrong. We saw what happened when the Mystic trials failed, Pete. You know, before they were using more AI.
I mean, that's it. Some will go wrong, but their success rate's incredible. Mate, before you do more on this, let's just throw in Clinigen quickly. C-L-I-N, Clinigen. I hold Clinigen. Yep. Had some belting news today. I mean, I don't really understand why it's been sold off so much, the share, you know, in the crisis and stuff, because it's a healthcare stock, for goodness sake. You know, okay, it does a lot of distribution, and maybe with flights and shipping being mucked up, maybe that was what market was fearing. But anyway, to me, it just looks really far too beaten up. Anyway, today it had some really good news, because it said, firstly, it said, we're hardly affected, we're doing fine. The other thing they did was they've got a new drug. I can't remember what it was called, began with an E. And it's they've basically got the royalties and the sort of license for the drug from Porton Biopharma. And basically they've got the rights to market it, package it, distribute it, flog it, all that kind of stuff in loads of countries around the world. And Porton Biopharma will just keep they'll get paid a royalty for it, and obviously they own the trademark, and they'll keep manufacturing it. So Clin just do all the, you know, the work with it. But the good thing is that Clin, this is what Clin do, you know, and it sort of validates. They've done some acquisitions recently, like they acquired a packaging company, and it sort of validates their model and what they're doing. So it's excellent, up 22% when I looked earlier.
That is excellent, Pete. I mean, what's your thoughts for them going ahead?
I very happy to hold it. I think it reminds me a lot of Alliance Pharma, APH. And we've actually discussed Clin on a podcast before. And I just think it just looks too cheap to me. I think people worry about the debt, I think. But you've got to remember, with debt, with healthcare companies, you get superb cash flow. Very predictable cash flow, so that can have higher debt than most companies would, but it's still only like 2.8 or 3 times EBITDA, so it's not like ridiculous.
Okie dokie. All right, one of the stocks, Pete, which I've had on the radar for some time, and I've kept it to myself because I like people to do their own research and find these stocks themselves, is a company that I purchased back in June of last year. Okay. It's called Summit Therapeutics. And it's been transferred over to the US listing. That happened on the 14th of the 2nd. So it's 14th of February of this year.
Is that SMMT?
That's the one. It used to be Sum on the UK listings, Pete.
Oh, he's some on, so it's some on the UK,
no,
right?
It's no longer on the UK. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, it's no longer UK. So it's now NASDAQ, is it?
So it's Advanced Innovative Therapies. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that stock, Pete, one of the go-to stocks in the minute in America is called Zoom for working from home, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this stock, Pete, Summit, ticker symbol SMMT.
Yeah.
Is up in the past 3 months 175%.
Oof,
year to date 161%.
That's a cracker.
Yeah, so that's what's sitting in my the bad thing about it, and I'm quite disappointed obviously, is that they needed to go over to the US to get recognized for what they were doing.
They've been listed it over here for a long time, haven't they?
Listed it for a long time.
Is it someone called Jim Mellon?
No. It's Duggan.
Oh, it's
Is
not.
Duggan is the chairman,
Okay.
yeah, and the largest investor in the stock. Robert W. Duggan is the executive chairman. He's got the largest holding of the stock,
Right.
and he bought up a huge amount last year, and then decided, yeah, I want it listed in the US, and that's what he's done. And since being over there, obviously they're doing various tests and all the rest of it. The Americans have embraced what they're getting involved in, what they're trying to do with C. diff and all the rest of it. 161% it's up, but it's sitting in my dealing account rather than my ISA, which is what infuriates me, because obviously I invested in it when it was in my ISA, yeah, and then when it got transferred to the US, it can't be in my ISA anymore, so it's now sitting in my dealing account.
So you could have a tax implication.
I could have a tax implication, but the beauty of it is it's up over 150% for me since I purchased it. Yeah.
Mate,
And
let's be fair, mate.
164%. Yeah.
Let's be fair. The government's going to need the revenue, so
The other thing is, it's got this thing. It's obviously dealing with infectious diseases, but it's got nothing to do with COVID-19, and it's still doing really, really well. And I'm sure at some point they're going to have something to do with that strategy as well, regarding COVID-19. But I'm not hearing much on that side of things at the minute. It's all antibiotic stuff that they're dealing with.
So do you think there's much upside there then?
Would I be? I never advise anyone to buy anything that's gone up 15, 20, 30, 40%. I'm just mentioning it as a stock that I've
Yeah,
got.
yeah. But
Obviously,
you're gonna hold it, are you?
I'm going to hold it because
Yeah.
they still haven't got through all the trials that they're meant to be doing, and get things out there. It's only a $271 million dollar market cap, Pete.
Yeah,
That's
so
so it's tiny.
it'll be the usual thing of ups and downs, but
Ups and downs, yeah.
you think the trend's pretty good.
Absolutely.
Mate, you were talking about your reasons for moving into cash and stuff. I don't know if you've managed to cover all that or.
Well, the thing is, it's about uncertainty, Pete, and it's the
Yeah.
admission that I don't know where the markets are going to go,
Yeah.
right? And it's very rare. I've been doing this for 27 years. I have not had this much cash sitting in my portfolio for 27 years,
Yeah.
yeah? And with regards to what I'm reading and reading and reading more and more and more so, sometimes when you don't know, yeah, the best thing to do is sometimes some people say, do nothing. Okay, that's fine.
Stand
But
aside.
you stand aside. You
Yeah.
know, I am doing that, standing aside. I'm taking some of the money off the table, which I have done. Yeah. The edges on the AstraZeneca are currently off, which is fine. Yeah. But I've got cash sitting there now to deploy it when I want. Yeah. So I'm looking at the market, looking at the market, I'm looking at opportunities. I'm nibbling here, I'm nibbling there, not talking about it. And when I'm ready, I'll say, I've got this, I've got that. And the other thing that I've been doing, as you've seen, Pete, is that I'm being as transparent as I possibly can. I'm putting the contract note out there. I don't see anyone else doing that to say, this is when I bought it. This is the price that I bought it at. You know what? I've sold that. Here's the contract note. This is what I sold it at. Other
Oh,
people just saying, I bought that, I sold that. I sold that for 40%. I bought that, sold that for that percent. There's no transparency. I'm not saying everyone has to do what I'm doing, but
No, but
I'm just trying to add another layer of transparency.
it's one of those things where if you are going to say what you're buying and selling on Twitter or whatever, then you really need to be consistent and transparent. And you can't just do it for the winning trades and forget the ones that you lose on. I mean,
Absolutely,
and
which is what happened with the Resolute one I mentioned last time. I was only in it for a little while, and I thought, oh, I've got this one completely wrong. So I had to put all the contract notes, the buyers and the sells, all out there together.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, mate. One of the ones that that I hold that reported, I think last week, but I thought was really interesting. And you and me spoke about this one on the phone, not on a podcast, but separately on the phone. We mentioned it, and that's On the Beach, OTB. Now, obviously, it's incredibly risky because it's in the travel sector, yeah. But I think what's going to happen with these kind of sectors is there's going to be a shakeout, and there's going to be a lot of weak ones that go to the wall, go bust. But there's going to be the better ones that survive, And the thing about On the Beach, I thought it was an incredible update because there was a lot of information in there about the business model. And what stood out, well, the first thing was they reckon that if there's no flights for 6 months, then it barely touches their financing facility. So what they're really saying is they're okay for 6 months and they could probably go longer. Yeah, with no flights at all. They're basically like a travel agent, yeah, but it's an online only travel agent. That's not strictly true. They do have some shops now because they bought someone called Classic Holidays or whatever a while ago. Anyway, what really stood out, and it just blew me away, this, they said their cost base is 1/20th of a full operator like a TUI or a Thomas Cook or whatever. 1/20th.
That's what we call a lean machine, Pete.
It's nuts. Yeah. And they were saying that they just need 2 million quid a month to keep ticking over. That's their sort of cost of ticking over. They're actually going to spend a little bit more than that because they're still doing some investments and things, you know, for the future. But it just struck me how lean they are. And they said the other difference is that they're, when they get a customer buy a holiday from them, they ring fence that money. So that money is in a separate pot. So if they have to, so if there's a cancellation and that money has to go back, they've got it and they can just give it to the customer. Yeah. But what other people like, you know, the TUIs and the Thomas Cooks and all those, well, used to do or do, is that money just goes into their pot of money. And then when the customer asks for it back, it's like, oh dear, we got problems. We haven't got any money, you know. And I just thought those simple facts, that incredibly low cost base, and the ring fencing of the customer money, I just thought that's fantastic.
Pete, I'm not sure how many businesses can get to the scale that they've got to with that kind of lean sort of system. But you know, they're going to survive and do well out of this. You know, they're going to come back even more leaner. And even more stronger, and
absolutely,
that's going to be a winning sort of play once we get out of this. You know what I mean?
If people weren't looking at it before,
they need to look at it again, because the larger ones, the TUIs that are still surviving, and the others that are out there that have got 5 times, 10 times greater cost base, they're not going to be able to compete.
Mm.
You know, because you saw Carnival with that big fundraise. You know, you had a company that was £50 a share not so long ago, having to raise money at, I don't know what it was in the end. Was it £8 a share or something like £6 a share?
I didn't really notice it. But,
you know, so now you've got essentially a £1-2 billion company saddled with £12 billion worth of debt or something daft like that.
Yeah.
I've got quite the figures, so I'm not looking at it. But boy, oh boy, it's just absolutely scary, Pete.
And this is one of the things, it's like the traditional holiday kind of model is that, you know, the new ones is they own airlines, they own hotels, and it's all just cost and commitment, isn't it?
It is.
So it's scary stuff.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were saying before about being very, very selective regarding the stocks that you own, and look underneath the bonnet, look at what's going on regarding their debt, look how what their cash burn is, look what sectors they're in, yeah? And also consider what has the CEO, the CFO, said and done in the past 6 months. You know, were they selling the stock near the highs? Yeah. Are they now buying the stock because it's hit a 52-week, two or three-year low? And if they're not buying the stock themselves right now, what are they doing asking you to buy it?
Yeah, they're expecting you to buy it and not buying it themselves.
Absolutely, Pete.
Mate, another one I saw that I don't hold, yeah, because, you know, like every morning I have a look through the RNSs and I tend to ignore loads of them because they're just garbage. But one that I spotted that I don't hold, but I think it's an interesting one, is Spirent, SPT. Do you know that one?
I know of it historically. Another tech company, Pete, yes.
Yeah, I'm not totally clear on what they do, but I think a lot of it is like testing of mobile phone handsets and mobile phone networks and things like that. They seem to be doing really well from the 5G thing. You know, they seem to, and just reading their update, I think it was pretty much all positive. It was like really good. And I thought that's an interesting one. So that's down in my book as a potential one to have, you know.
Yeah, the telecommunication testing company.
Yeah.
HQ'd in Crawley. Is that near you, Pete? West Sussex? Anywhere near?
Yeah, Crawley, Gatwick, isn't it?
I'm okay, mate.
So that's Gatwick. It's round a corner, mate. Not far.
Yeah, so they're in the sweet spot for 5G, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. And the update read really well.
And they're going to pay a dividend.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a rare thing these days.
Well, it's a tech company and it's paying dividends. It's not a bad, it's two good things there, Pete.
Yeah.
And third thing is they're in a sweet spot.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And profits are up.
Another one I read, this is from my little book, was Aviva. I don't know how to pronounce it. I think it's Aviva. It's not Aviva. It's not the insurance
Yeah, it's the
company.
one AVEVA, Pete.
Yeah, AVV. And what they do is, I think they reported today, I think I read it, and they do software, but it's now going to a cloud-based model. So it's like recurring revenues, and they're up to 60% of their revenues are now recurring. Because it used to be a license-based thing, which is like a one-off license charge or whatever. Now they charge every month for it, yeah? And they do software for industrial plants. So it's like if you've got, say you've got a power station, their software helps you design where to put a new transformer. And I guess it's all about workflow and, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I've no idea what I'm talking about, but I think that is a really classy business. I've always liked that one. I don't know why I've never owned it, but I've always thought it looks good. I read the update today. They're doing pretty well. I think there was a couple of bits that weren't quite as strong, but overall, I thought, yeah, that's really good, actually.
Okay, it was another one to consider. Pete, we're at 56 minutes here, mate.
Okay.
We're running over.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to all the individuals out there that we, Pete, I, and everybody else around the world are now classing as superheroes. And they are. These are our farmers, our social workers, our youth workers,
Cape Crusaders.
our chemists, our bin men, our firemen, our police, our doctors, our nurses, our carers, and the people working in these homes, and working at the front line. And just to say, thank you all for doing the work that you're doing under extreme pressures and extreme risks. And you are heroes to absolutely everybody. And anybody out there that still is not taking this serious, please consider the fact that there's other people out there that are taking it serious, that are putting their lives at risk and are doing this on your behalf. So do what you can to support them and do what you can to keep them out of harm's way by behaving yourself, staying at home, and keeping them safe.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, there's so many people. We were talking about the healthcare professionals earlier. Taking enormous risks on our behalf, and we got to get through it. And these people are doing a brilliant job to help us.
And we will get through it. We're going to be
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. We
another
will.
couple of weeks, and we'll get some more news maybe in the next week or so to give us some updates. And just keep on keeping on, people. You know what I mean? Keep
Yeah.
yourself motivated. Do what you need to do to keep yourself upbeat. If you can go out for walks, go out for walks if you can. If you can FaceTime your families, do that. And just keep yourself in as best spirits as you possibly can. And as Pete and I said before, if you're on Twitter and you want to reach out, just send Pete a DM, send me a DM, and we'll do what we can to support you.
Yeah, I'm on open DM, so I mean, I won't get
Absolutely.
back to you immediately, but send me a DM and I'll be in touch with anything you're not
Absolutely.
sure about, whatever.
You're not alone, ladies and
Absolutely.
gents. Please take care of yourselves. Thank you all for your feedbacks that you've given. Thank you all for subscribing to our various channels. Keep subscribing. If you're a first time listener, please subscribe. If you're enjoying it, please send it and pass it forward to one of your friends, families, or whatever that's interested in investing. And until next time, take care. God bless.
Thank
Look
you very
after each
much.
other. Thank you, Pete. Take care,
Bye.
mate.
Yeah, bye.
Bye for now, mate.